Okay. Okay, my name is Dr. Barbara Post. I'm presenting the second issue. I'm German. I'm working for CARE International in Ethiopia, and I'm presenting about a child survivor project which has closed 1 year ago and which was highly successful. There are no relationships to disclose, apart from that USAID has funded it. So thanks to my co-authors, Sarah Buchanan, Freywood Ashetu, Anthony Clouder, Nina Negash, and Chris Roy. The outline is covering the outcomes. I know that's a bit unusual to start with, but the issue was to find, to look on the theories which can explain why our project was so successful. And, where's Farda district? This is a map on the left side of Ethiopia. In Ethiopia, there's one region called Amhara with about 10 million people. Within this Amhara region, there are several districts. One of them is Farda. Farda has about 250,000 population. It's very rural. 95% of the population are Orthodox Christians. We use the baseline and final evaluation methodology, which is published on the childsurvival.com website. This is the comparison of baseline data from January 2003 and final evaluation data of May 2007. Women who initiated breastfeeding within 1 hour of birth, target was 60%. At the baseline, we were at 33%. In the final, this has more than doubled. Women who breastfed colostrum rose from 62% to 92%. Women who practiced exclusive breastfeeding till 6 months, from 73% to 95%. Then looking down, women seeking care from a qualified provider when the child has a cough or difficult breathing rose from 27% to 84%. Women who washed their hands before feeding rose from 68% to 98%. Then in the lower part are the vaccination figures. Children who received measles vaccination rose from 25% to 74%. With DPT3 from 30% to 69%. So the framework for this project was the integrated management of childhood illness disease concept. The behavior changes found were on all levels: feeding practices, vaccination rates, hygiene practices, health-seeking behaviors, community took over responsibility for health. What does that mean? Normally, in a very rural, conservative context, which is more or less illiterate, people think God is determining your destiny. So health or death is not really seen as something you can influence. So when I say community took responsible for health, they saw what kind of measures they could change, for example, vaccination, and they started to actively follow up members who didn't go for things like this. One underlying element was as well the establishment of trust between the health system, the formal health system, and the community. This is not necessarily evident in African context. If you look on feeding practices and health-seeking behavior, that's two of the worst components. Normally, if you look in IMNCI projects, that's the components which change the least. So for us, the question was, how has it happened that we were so successful? We know what we have done, but we weren't really sure what are the elements, what could be scaled up in another project to have the same success. If you look on health-seeking behavior, just to give one example or two, if a child has fever, you would suspect malaria, but in that religious and cultural context, the thinking was that the children are possessed by the devil, so they would go to the religious priest, which would help them. They would give them holy water, they would give them blessings and baptism to help the child. So the other issue, for example, was vaccination. Children are not going out in public before they are baptized. Baptization is at 80 days for girls, 40 days for boys. That means you lose all the early vaccination data, the dates. So these kind of behaviors were behind avoiding health-seeking behavior from our rational understanding why you should do it. Did we have impact? Okay. I think it's relatively rare that after 5 years you declare you have impact, but I think we had impact. The first site is from a health extension worker. Before, we had so many children child deaths in our area that we were thinking about doing away with the funeral groups, that support groups which help to limit the costs among the community members if somebody dies. Nobody could get any work done because we were going to funerals all the time. Last year we only had 4 child deaths and 3 of them were from accidents. And then down there you have these marvelous priests which were part of our project. We used to have 30 to 40 child deaths in each church between May and June every year. Now there are few. So what were the strategies behind? There was skill development on several levels that included government employees, but especially the community members. There was a community mobilization for behavior change, especially about hygiene practices, vaccination practices, and child and health-seeking behavior. And then with the government, we really tried to work on the quality of care. And there was a component where people could easily access money to go to the health facility. The background of the whole project was the, as I said before, the IMCI framework. Community skills building. It's a very scattered, environment. There are about 2,460 villages. So for every village, there was a mother-to-mother support group. And this is a very conservative society. There is no way out. If there is a mother-to-mother support group, you are part of it, if you are a mother. So there were about 60 churches, and we trained 3 to 4 people per church. So we trained 527 religious leaders. Religious leaders or priests have no university diploma. They have this call to become a priest or a deacon, but basically they are still in the rural area, they're still working as farmers. So they are really having the same living conditions as the other villagers. So they have the same thinking background. They don't have a hyper-superstitious academic knowledge or something. They have the same beliefs. And before we came, they shared the belief that if some child has a fever, he's possessed by the devil. We trained and supported volunteer community health workers. We established 47 school clubs on maternal and child health, and we trained 160 government. Kabul is the lowest administrative unit. 160 government leaders, who are not, who are representing the administration on village level. So the question is, why was this project so successful? What did we do right? What could be scaled up? So looking to, the first thing which came to our mind was the health belief model. I think you are all familiar with that. One is about perceived threat, perceived benefits, perceived barriers, and then cues to action. I think it was very successfully applied for smoking behavior change, things like that. The other theory which we came across was the stages of behavior change, with being unaware of a problem, pre-contemplation, and then over the steps of contemplation, preparation, action, maintenance. I think the whole set of stages, I think, has 12. However, these two models didn't really explain what we did, because we are not talking about individuals in development countries. We are talking about societies and communities. So there are some gaps with this. In particularistic societies, which I talk about, the needs of family members, of the surrounding, of the neighbors, of your community are more important to what you do than your individual decision. You do not really have an individual decision-making power. So both models, which I just shortly presented, are relying on external stimuli. And then from that point, you have a cognitive process and you change your individual behavior. So These models also fail to account for particular strategic structural constraints which present barriers like illiteracy and no access to health knowledge. So most African societies are not focusing on the individual at all, but on the society. You have these green people who are basically, they are the ones who want to be part of this group, and they are defining the norms of this group. That's what everybody does, and that's what's normal. Then you have some people who might change behaviors if they see a profit for themselves. And then there are people who are outside the group, the red ones. These people have poor relationship with the others. They have their own identity, their own norms, and they are basically not respected members of the society. So the green majority determines what is the community norm. And that's what we wanted to change, the community norm. Because the community norm said, if there is a fever in a child, this is the devil who's possessing the child. So the theory of self-efficacy is more focusing on outcome expectancy. And there are empirical studies which actually show that the perceived efficacy, that means if you think you can change your behavior, this is more important that you really will actually do it than the skills you actually have at that moment in time. So if you think you can change your behavior, even if your skill set is very low, you will do it. If you don't think you can do it, you won't. So individuals' motivation in this social cognitive learning theory are rather influenced by subjective factors. It's not so much the cognitive processes which makes you change your behavior, but it's subjective factors like beliefs. What is your friend doing? What's your neighbor doing? So we actually found that the behavior change behavior change theory of Badura, social cognitive learning theory, is something which can explain what was actually happening in FADA. All stakeholders in FADA were integrated into the project. Everybody who has had any importance in this project was participating. Positive deviant mothers who had already a better behavior when it came to child nutrition were used as facilitators for the mother-to-mother support group, one group per village. Ethiopian Orthodox Church priests used biblical allegories to convince mothers to improve health behaviors. For example, Maria took Jesus' baby to her breast. She was breastfeeding for 6 months, nothing else. They were preaching that every Sunday after sermon. Ethiopian community data boards helped that all members of the community were accountable for health outcomes. Sunday after the church, they were putting on a chalkboard how many child deaths in the last 3 months, how many vaccination defaulters. So basic child survival data. The BCC strategy, we were using authority for promotion, that was the priests. They adapted the language, people could identify with Maria, modeling the positive deviant mothers. There were demonstrations, the positive deviant mothers were going to every mom's house when she knew the baby is 6 months old, it should start complementary feeding. She was demonstrating at her household how to do it. Then the defaulter were followed up. If there were children which weren't going for the vaccination, the priests and the mother-to-mother support group leaders followed actively this mother. There were cross visits between successful villages. There was a community ownership. As I said, there was a financial system which was facilitating to go to the health facilities. There was a networking and developing trust between the government system and the community. And we actually eliminated the traditional treatment system, because if the priests are the ones who are giving the blessing for the child which is under fever, and you tell the priest this is maybe not the best way to do it, then from one day to the other you don't have any traditional healers anymore who are giving this support. And that's kind of what happened. So these are the actors. The most important ones are the mother-to-mother support group and their leaders, and you could really not escape this project. If you were a mother of a village, there was no way that there wouldn't go anybody after you. Then the religious leaders, they used a small booklet, like a preaching booklet, with simple messages. They had a high level of authority. They followed up every individual resistant mother, and they were teaching after Sunday Mass. And I think there is an element of learning by success. If you see within 3 or 4 years that the child death rate is going down, I think that's something which is really tangible for everybody in the community. Conclusion: the behavior change strategy applied took into account the traditional leadership structure and provided support to enhance self-confidence to change behavior of mother and health promoters. I think what happened here is that the whole of the society was changed in a way that they felt we can change our behavior successfully. Everybody was involved, and because everybody was involved, it would have been, if an individual would have decided to stay with his own behaviors, he would have learned that this is the wrong way. Everybody would have been followed up by his neighbors, his leaders. We challenged the community norm successfully, and they actually changed. And I think that's quite a success after 5 years of implementation. The new behaviors were instituted in time to bring about better and tangible health outcomes. The project is sustainable, and the new norm has replaced the old norm. Thank you. Now, it's a bit difficult to take for me questions for my own presentation, but maybe you just ask. Okay.
Did you use all the three theories, or were there just some aspects from all three theories for behavior change?
What do you mean with criteria of behavior change? You know,
did you use self-belief model?
No, we didn't. No, this presentation is about, you know, we didn't think about all these elements before. We was just wondering why we were successful. And when we were looking for the health belief model and the stages of change, we said, this doesn't explain why we were successful. So when I finally stepped over the Badura theory, I said, that actually explains it. So within that context, kind of, we changed the whole of the social environment to make this behavior change happen. It has, you know, they are most of the people are illiterate there. So you don't have access to health information in brochures or anything. Or even radio is difficult to access. So if the other two behavior change theories are rather focusing, to my understanding, on a cognitive process. You decide it's bad for your health if you smoke and you change. But that's nothing which you can apply in the context of FARA. So it wouldn't really explain it. I don't know it. We would like to do it, but we couldn't find money for it yet. we are still looking for a budget line to scale it up. We would love to do it. And one of the propositions we have just made is to do it with the Oromos. The problem with the Oromos is that they have a Muslim culture, but I was confirmed by my Muslim staff that in the Muslim culture you have a hierarchy which would allow as well to put pressure, because in that case we didn't start on the community level when it came to the priest. It was the patriarch who said, okay, we do this together with care. So his approval for training the priests, being actually present in the workshops, had a lot of to do with it, because the power in this church is enormous, and it's, yeah, from up to down. And we are not sure. I think we could do it with the Muslim societies in Oromo as well. It's just, if you find me some money, we try it. Any other question? Okay. We might have, is the fourth presenter present now?
I'm the fourth.
Oh, the fifth. No? Okay, so we might have time later to discuss if there's any interest. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Olu Okundayu. He's associate professor in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at Jackson State University.